Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today lives in a pretty expensive area where the numbers just don't work for buying a rental property. The properties are just too expensive, and my guest wasn't able to get the kind of return that he was looking for. So he started looking at properties in other parts of the country where the properties were much cheaper and he was able to get a better return. So in doing this, he kind of figured out what works and what doesn't work. And he developed a system to evaluate different areas of the country, to find the best neighborhoods, and then to buy properties without physically being there to actually see the property. And on the show today, he's going to share with us his system for buying rental properties, and we'll walk through exactly what he does from start to finish. So let's take a really quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back, and we'll meet Eric Judge from Connecticut. Having to evict a tenant is painful. The best way to protect yourself from evictions is to screen tenants, and the best way that I know of to screen tenants is TransUnion Smart Move. It's a really valuable online screening tool delivering credit, eviction, and background reports in minutes. And their proprietary tenant credit check predicts evictions 15% better than generic credit scores. See why over 4 million landlords have used SmartMove to make better leasing decisions. Use code RENTAL25 at checkout to save 25% at tenantscreening.com. That's code RENTAL25. At tenantscreening.com. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Eric, so when you first started buying rentals, you started buying close to home, and then at some point something changed and you started buying out of state. What happened? What changed?
Yeah, so I got a call from the broker I had used on my last purchase locally. And they kind of pivoted me to Detroit, Michigan during the Great Recession. After taking a look at some of the properties they were showing me, and the prices range from $1,000 and less to higher price points, I just really did some soul searching and realized that from a risk perspective, this wasn't the type of risk that I wanted to take on.
Sure.
And I kind of said, you know, thanks for showing this to me, but I'm going to pass. However, the broker was a little persistent and called me back a week later. This time, they actually showed me a lot of opportunities in Killeen, Texas. And for those who may not be familiar with Killeen, Killeen is home of basically Fort Hood, which is the third largest Army installation in the country. And so in this area, I really got excited because I found a lot of properties that I thought were priced well below their price points that I was looking at, in addition to which they were much more on the newer side, being many of them had been built 10 years or less.
Now, some people might be thinking, Texas sounds a lot less risky than Detroit, but you're in Connecticut and Texas is really far away. Like, some people might think that's risky, but I guess you didn't see it as being risky?
I did not. I kind of looked at it as this was my opportunity to move up. What I eventually did was I bought two four-unit buildings there to get the equivalent here would almost cost me three times the amount or maybe four. And they wouldn't have been providing any net income immediately. Mm. I would have basically have been subsidizing them in the beginning years. So I viewed this as a great opportunity.
Yeah.
In addition to which, the properties that I could have gotten in my backyard, they would have been 50 years older.
Right. Okay. Okay. So newer properties, they cash flow better. So was your goal going into these properties, was it purely for cash flow? Or were you thinking these are also really good deals? This area is probably going to appreciate over time.
Absolutely. I am a total return investor. I really like looking at opportunities that are not only providing a modest monthly net income, but also have some future opportunity for price appreciation.
Awesome.
That's kind of been the way that I've selected the investments that I have over, you know, the last 10 years or so.
Now, in addition to the properties you bought in Killeen, you've also bought in four different areas. So you've really kind of figured out how to buy properties out of state. You've kind of developed a system for how you're doing this. And I'd like to kind of walk through exactly like from everything you do from start to finish. So when you're deciding on a city that you want to invest in, like, what are you looking for? Like, what is a good, like, how do you decide what's a good and growing area?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Really, what I'm going to look at are fundamentals from an economic standpoint. What are the job opportunities there? Is there growth in the number of jobs that are available? What's the median income for that particular place? Those are some of my starting points. And what I like to do with most of the places I've been, I start at Wikipedia. Wikipedia does a very good job of providing the median income, giving you some of the demographics. Is this a place where there are more older people, younger people? And then I would go to the particular area's own website and start to look at who are the major employers and try to get an assessment of, is this an area that's going to be on the decline or not? And as you look at the various industries and things like that, you'll get a feel for that. I've shared with you, Dan, that, you know, one of the areas that I ventured into was Atlanta for that very reason. I was well aware when you look at a lot of the national statistics, that area had been thriving. And so I picked that as one of the areas to start to buy multiple properties.
Wow. I love it. So it seems like you don't have any secret resources. I mean, you're looking at Wikipedia. That's just a really basic resource. So you're getting just a real good overview of the area and then figuring out if this is something you want to look into further.
That's absolutely true. I tell you, Wikipedia was always my starting point. But what I love to do is to go into a particular city's own website, like Fayetteville. I didn't know much about Fayetteville, North Carolina. I went to their website. You know, what is it that they feel prideful about and want to boast about? And so that would be the second place where I get a good feel for a place. Many local websites do a really good job of giving you a feel for what's fun in the area. They'll even talk about whether, you know, how many hospitals they have and all these different amenities that people might be interested in. And then what are the fun things that are there to do for amusement, et cetera? Right. And so I looked at that because, you know, as you start to think about renting out your properties, you know, you want to be in places where people want to be.
Right, right. Okay, so when you decide on an area, would you go and visit in person, or was your further research all kind of done over the phone and also online?
Yes, Dan, great question. I would do a little of all those things. I really fully utilize the web to do my most in-depth research. And then I use people to validate whatever it is I found on the web. And what do I mean by that? So I've given you a few of the resources, be it either Wikipedia or going to the website of the local place, but also I would start to utilize Google Maps to really look at a street for a property that I might be looking at. And I would really go far and wide. And then I started to develop relationships with real estate agents. I use the real estate agents as my eyes and also as my validators of anything that I was feeling. Because once again, you know, when you do it the way I've done it, your disadvantage is you don't have local knowledge. Mm-hmm. So real estate agents in a given area will have that. And what you're looking for are the more seasoned ones. And so as I'm looking at properties, I really did thorough investigation of those particular realtors and what they knew about the market, how long they've been involved. And so after developing those relationships, I really use them as my scouts.
Okay. All right. So to use Atlanta for an example, so you would decide that Atlanta met the qualifications you're looking for. And then would the realtor then, would you lean on them to maybe let you know about what a good neighborhood would be? Or was that stuff you could figure out?
I did it in a different order.
Okay.
I really, at this time, remember, there's tons of properties on the market. So I would go and find things that I liked from a visual standpoint. And then I would have that second conversation with the realtor about what type of neighborhood is this up and coming? Is it stable? And things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense because it is difficult. Like if you go on Zillow and you look at properties, a property might look great. I mean, it maybe looks like a good solid house, but you just don't know, not being local, what that neighborhood is like. So
I totally agree.
Yeah.
A couple of the properties that I bought in Atlanta, one of the selling points, and this was a realtor telling me, that it was close to their transportation system, MARTA.
Okay.
And that ended up being a really smart move because that was of interest to certain people.
Right. Okay. Okay. So then the realtor then will guide you that, hey, this neighborhood is good. This neighborhood maybe is too far away from public transportation. This wouldn't be good. So you're really kind of relying on that realtor to kind of guide you to the next phase of your search?
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. All right, so then as far as finding properties, did you tell your realtor, or were you looking at any benchmarks like the 1% rule or like any kind of return that you were trying to get on the properties? Like, or was there a price point you were looking at?
I did have a price point, and from there, I'm a quantitatively oriented person, so mm-hmm. I like doing my own numbers, and not all
okay.
the real estate agents are going to have that
yeah.
strength. So I would typically, I gave them the price points or the range as I was looking at, and then I ultimately am always going to run the numbers to make sure things look. And here's another thing for people to look at. So once again, to be able to make the calculations, you need to know what the rents are.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, some realtors are good at that. I found that not all of them are necessarily good at telling you what the rents can be in
right.
the area. So you really still need to utilize other resources. Zillow has gotten very good at this. Back when I first started, that wouldn't have been the place I would have gone to get the rental income estimates. I'd have probably gone to Craigslist.
Right.
Because what I did is I put in a particular street address and I'm able to see the competition that I'm going to be going against with my property. What I also liked about that is you can look at what's for rent in that particular area and look at the condition it's in, so you know the standard to which you're going to have to bring your property up to.
Okay.
So in those days, I kind of used Craigslist to provide that because it had some good search features. And like, it, once again, you could see everything that was available. And last thing, during this period, one of the things that was helpful with doing that, you could also see how long it was taking people to get things rented up. You could see how long they had been trying to pursue potential renters. And that's important,
right?
I'm buying properties that are empty. They don't have tenants in them. And one of the things that I'm good at is getting things up and running quickly, right? Because otherwise, you know, they're carrying costs.
Right. Right. Okay. So did that always work out, or did you ever get burned where you bought a property that just wasn't as good as you thought it was going to be?
So I had, and I'm actually, this week is a great week because I'm actually selling it finally. I have one that started out great and then ended up not being a very good place to rent. And you would have thought that it would have been. It's located on a golf course. There's swimming pools. There's a lake nearby. All these great amenities, which was one of the things that attracted me. So it started out being a great rental, getting great rental income. And then here we go. The thing you're trying to assess is what's going to go in the area. So the area's economics kind of shifted down a little bit, and that kind of hurt it from being a rental. And about 2 years ago, I tried the first time to sell it at a profit, believe it or not. And I am recently going to be able to finally do that. But from a rental standpoint, it was a true dog. And wow. I truly regret it.
That's interesting, because you would think in that kind of neighborhood, that would always be desirable. But I guess it wasn't. So looking back on that, is there anything that the listeners can take away from? Because I would think just objectively that property would make a lot of sense.
Fundamentally, the population wasn't strong enough to support it.
Okay.
That's in hindsight what I really realized. It's kind of outside the metro core.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. So let's go back to when you've got your realtor. So your realtor then is helping to guide you into areas. Now, as far as actually seeing the properties, when you find a property that meets all your criteria, would they go into the property and maybe take some video for you and show you what the property is? Okay.
Yes. Dan, that was my criteria. I would basically send them there to do video, take tons of pictures, and really try to see things from that vantage point. And what I found very useful when I found the good ones, I mean, they really would give you a sense of, I think you should do, you know, change the carpet or clean the carpet, paint it. You know, this may not be attractive. Here's something I found that you might not have noticed from the pictures. They were very helpful with that. Also being a resource with different vendor relationships that they had, they would lend to me. And that worked out very well.
Vendors as in like contractors?
Contractors and handymen.
Okay. So were you looking for properties that were more turnkey and ready to go, or were you looking for properties that needed some work?
Yeah, I was looking for things that I might say we're looking, needed a little love, not a lot of love. So I only bought one of those, being in the latter category of maybe needing a lot of love. So typically what I was doing was replacing carpet, painting. A lot of appliances during this time were missing for various reasons. And that would really be it.
Okay.
So I bought a lot of carpets and appliances and did a lot of painting. That would be it.
Okay.
But I also found some that didn't need as much. So it all varied. It was really all back to how the economics were working.
Right.
It was back to the one place, and this was the second four-unit building that I bought down there. It wasn't in great shape. It was in a great neighborhood, more residential neighborhood, where people really wanted to be with great school systems, et cetera. But, you know, I had to put $20,000 into it.
Okay.
There was a number of things. I had an inspector go through, but I decided that was a smart decision. And it was.
Right.
That one rented very well. And when I did sell it, I sold it at a profit. So
generally, when you would buy a property that maybe something that needs paint, carpet, appliances, were you getting bids for all that before you put in your contract? Or did you just kind of have a ballpark for how much that was all going to cost?
I was using the ballpark.
Okay. All right. So you go under contract, you get the property fixed up, and the realtor is lending you their handymen, their contractors to get the properties up. Now, what I think is interesting is that you were able to self-manage some of these properties from Connecticut. That sounds Correct. Really difficult. How are you doing that?
No. So what I would do is I strike up a relationship with some realtors. I truly believe that you don't want a realtor who's also a property manager. That's a different skill set. But what I would get many of them to do is screen people for me, right?
Okay.
Back to what's your disadvantage of not being somewhere? Well, you physically, I mean, you could do it over Skype like we're doing or over the web on some basis, but I preferred that they screen the people. And so I would pay them to screen the person. Once they found someone that I thought would be a good tenant, I would take over from that standpoint. I would call them up, have a conversation, tell them who I was, tell them how to get in touch with me, basically, and then instruct them to where to send the payments. And I would basically make sure they knew that I wasn't, and I hate this term, but I'm going to use it just for our listeners, an absentee landlord. Mm-hmm. I was going to be very engaged. And if something was broken, call me immediately and we're going to get it fixed.
What about like not being taken advantage of? When you have a contractor, they see that you're some out-of-state investor. They probably think you're some rich guy. How do you get them to treat you fairly and to know that you're not getting ripped off?
So when I was dealing with the relationships from the real estate agents, I didn't have to worry about that because they were more interested in maintaining the relationship they had with those agents that had referred them and knowing that they were going to get a lot of business. That's why that works very well.
Yep.
And this is why I like HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor, I think, does a better job of vetting their particular contractors, be electricians, plumbers. And I never had the problem of them trying to gouge me for the reasons that you listed. I just never ran into
it. Okay, good. Eric has written a book. It's called Out of Town Landlord, and he goes into a lot more details about exactly how he was able to grow his portfolio living in another town. He shares a lot of really good information. I've read the book. I got a lot out of it, and I think you will too. If you want to check it out, I've got a link to it on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode239. I'd like to thank today's sponsor for making this episode possible. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. If you want to buy rental properties, whether you're just getting started or you want to add to your portfolio, the lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge. The reason that I like Chaley is that she's more of an educator or a mentor than she is a salesperson. She really takes the time to understand exactly what you're trying to accomplish with rental properties, and she'll come up with a plan to help you get there. If you want to find out more or set up a time to talk to Chaley, you can go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's RIDGE, lendinggroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all of the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the podcast. If this is your first time here, make sure you subscribe and you'll get new episodes delivered to you automatically every single Tuesday. Thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you next week. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.